Hybrids, a division of Recorded Books, presents My Quest for Health Equity, Notes on Learning While Leading, by David Satcher, MD, PhD. Read by David Satcher, MD, PhD. I am pleased to dedicate this book to my late wife, Nola Richardson Satcher. She died on June 23, 2019, after living with Alzheimer's disease for more than 20 years. Nola was a beautiful lady with a beautiful spirit, and I was fortunate to be married to her for 40 years. We married 2 years after my first wife, Callie, the mother of my 4 children, died of breast cancer in 1978. Nola adopted our children, who were then between the ages of 1 and 9. Nola was a poet and took seriously the rhythm of life, which most of us ignore or miss completely. During our 40 years together, she supported me in all of my endeavors. She served as First Lady of Meharry Medical College for almost 12 years. She served as First Lady of the CDC in the Office of the Surgeon General and as the First Lady of Morehouse School of Medicine. During most of these years and in the position in which she served, she was struggling with Alzheimer's, a disease that had also led to her mother's death in 2003. I owe Nola more than I could ever say, and I will always love her dearly. Acknowledgements. I hope that I have written this book in a way that is in and of itself an acknowledgement of the tremendous contribution my parents and siblings made to my survival and development. Dr. Jackson, who saved my life when I was 2 years old, died before I had a chance to meet him. He visited our small farm on his off day as I struggled with whooping cough and pneumonia. By not being able to admit me to the local hospital, Dr. Jackson was a victim of the same racist system that placed me at such a great risk. I will always be grateful to him and for his dedication to medicine. I hope I have lived and continue to live my life in a way that brings honor to Dr. Jackson, to my family, and all of those who have contributed to my almost 80 years of life. This book is also a tribute to the great support I have received during the process of writing and advancing this topic. I especially want to express my appreciation to my assistant, Mrs. Yvonne Kirkland, who has been committed to helping to make my work a reality and has also been concerned about the quality and relevance of my work. Dr. Joyce H. Nottingham and I met when I was a senior at Morehouse College and she was at Spelman College. I was a teaching assistant in the Comparative Anatomy Laboratory, and it was there that I came to appreciate her thirst for learning. I was fortunate when I returned to Atlanta and to Morehouse School of Medicine to find that Dr. Nottingham was still very much involved there. She served as my special assistant when I was president of the School of Medicine and later as associate director of the Satcher Health Leadership Institute. I sought and received her assistance in writing this book, and she has done so much to assure its integrity and quality. Special thanks to her for her expertise, her diligence, and commitment. There are many people whom I could thank, but generally I want to express my appreciation to those who value my work and who are willing to strive to make it what it has the potential to be, my greatest hope for the future. Introduction. This is a book about leadership. I've had the opportunity not only to lead, but also to sit at the feet of great leaders and to take on the challenge and the burden of leadership in academia, community, and government. This book is about a leadership journey that has taken place over a 50-year period, about lessons learned while on that journey. Finally, over the last 10 years, I have been involved in developing the Satcher Health Leadership Institute at Morehouse School of Medicine, SHLIMSM, to provide support for others who are working to develop their leadership skills. This book is not intended to be specifically about me. However, unavoidably, it builds on my life experience from the other side of the track and serving in several critical leadership roles. My intention is to share what I have learned and am learning in the quest to achieve public health equity, as well as what we at SHLI/MSM have learned about developing leaders in this arena. This is for me both a personal goal and a leadership goal, but it is not just about my experience and learning. It is about those key people who most influence me and my leadership style and our shared goal of global health equity. This is a three-dimensional perspective on leadership. The first dimension is that of a follower who experienced great role models for leadership, beginning with parents who had less than an elementary school education, but were great leaders nonetheless. A college president who was dynamic and committed, and a global leader who led a movement that I joined and who was assassinated at a young age. So the first dimension of my perspective on leadership is dynamic, challenging, and motivational. I was motivated to serve wherever I could contribute to the mission of health equity. Like the book, the first dimension is more the why of leadership than the how. The second dimension of my leadership perspective came with my assumption of leadership roles in the Atlanta University Center Civil Rights Student Movement in the early 1960s. This was the beginning of a lifetime of mission-oriented leadership for me, as I served in various leadership roles. I learned as much about leadership from persons who work with me and under me as I did from those above me. This was especially true of lessons learned from members of my leadership team. Leadership is indeed not position dependent, and I have seen great leadership take place at many different levels. The third dimension derives from my work over the last 10 years helping others to develop their leadership skills. While serving as the founding director and senior advisor of the Satcher Health Leadership Institute at Morehouse School of Medicine, and later just as an advisor. Certainly, for these last 10 years of my career or life, I had more time and motivation to focus on the meaning and the significance of leadership in my own life and in the life of others. Whether they were health professionals interested in learning how to develop and influence policy, potential community health leaders wanting to enhance their skills and improve community health, or determined and usually single parents wanting to give their very young children, 0 to 5, the best start in life. The unofficial motto of the Satcher Health Leadership Institute at the Morehouse School of Medicine is that in order to eliminate disparities in health and achieve health equity, we need leaders. Leaders who care enough, know enough, have the courage to do enough, and leaders who will persevere until the job is done. From my near-death experience as a child in segregated Alabama to the opportunities I've had to serve in key leadership roles, my personal history and background are certainly relevant to the topic of health equity dealt with in this book. The common thread running through all three dimensions of my leadership perspective is mission, the why of leadership. For my parents, there was a determination that their children would not only survive, but would have opportunities that they did not have, and would stand for something based on their faith in God. The service to God and others seemed to be my parents' major motivation, and they wanted their children to be much better prepared for this mission than they were. Even though they were suppressed by racial discrimination, which they felt they had to tolerate, they imagined and envisioned a different world for their children, and they wanted us to be prepared for it. My parents were leaders not only in the home, but also in the church and the community. Much of my perspective on leadership is based on my observation and interaction with them. They truly cared about their children, their community, their church, and their country. My parents taught me the importance of shared responsibilities. Each one of my siblings and I had jobs, which changed as we grew and developed. My first job was taking water to my siblings in the field. Next, I had the added responsibility of feeding the chickens and other yard animals. This progression continued until I myself was working in the fields, chopping cotton, corn, and other crops. Then I had the job of milking the cow and plowing the mule. Our jobs grew in complexity as we grew and aged, but at each stage of work, we were taught how to do the job, and then our work was inspected. In short, our parents believed you cannot expect what you don't inspect. Their inspection was a lesson in learning and leadership. My parents also were very religious and engaged us in church every Sunday, including Sunday school, where my dad was superintendent for 25 years. Their religion was not just about the Bible and worship, but it included a relationship with their fellow men and women. I remember us sharing whatever we had, and was usually meager, sharing it with our neighbors when they were in need. If a neighbor's cow was not giving milk and ours was, we shared our milk with them. I remember many times carrying pails of milk to a neighbor's home. Anniston is located approximately 89 miles from Atlanta, Georgia. The 1940 census estimated the population to be 25,523 people. And according to the Encyclopedia of Alabama, at that time, one-third of the population was African-American. Strict racial segregation became the norm during the 1890s and lasted until the mid-1960s. At the age of 2, I suffered from whooping cough, which led to pneumonia. I was seriously ill, and I can remember struggling to breathe. Dr. Jackson, the one black doctor in the area, agreed, after my father's pleading, to come see me on his off day. He spent the entire day with me, and as he prepared to leave, he told my parents that he did not expect me to survive the week. Nevertheless, he told them what they should do to keep me comfortable and give me the best chance of survival. Even though he considered me to be near death, Dr. Jackson could not admit me to the hospital because the only hospital in the area did not admit black patients or allow black physicians to admit. Black kids with illnesses like mine usually died at home without the benefit of hospital care. It is clear that I was introduced to disparities in health care early on while living on that 44-acre farm, Rocky Farm outside of Anniston. I survived in great part because my parents believed in God, and while they trusted the physician, their faith led them to believe they could help me through this illness. As was customary, people from the small farm community gathered around, and I could hear them singing and praying while they sat on the front porch. I remember struggling to breathe in the rhythmic whooping cough manner. Even though my mother followed Dr. Jackson's instructions carefully, she occasionally had to breathe for me while sitting with me throughout the night. Well, I survived, and my mother recounted this story to me almost every day for the next few years. By the time I was 5 years old, more than anything, I wanted to meet Dr. Jackson, the man who had helped to save my life. My parents finally agreed to take me to town to meet him for my 6th birthday. Regrettably, Dr. Jackson suffered a stroke and died at the age of 54 before I had a chance to meet him. A lasting curiosity about my illness and Dr. Jackson led me to want to be a doctor, just like Dr. Jackson. Clearly, I didn't understand what that meant. No one in my family had ever finished high school, but I was as certain as I had been about anything in my life that I would become a doctor. I declared it at age 6, and the rest is history. By the time I was 6 years old, I was shaping my mission to contribute to quality health care for all, and ultimately to health equity. The mission has driven me throughout my life and career, and has driven me to write this book. Leadership for me has never been about a position, even though I have occupied many. Rather, it's about the opportunity and responsibility to move the needle toward health equity. I work at the Satchel Leadership Institute, Morehouse School of Medicine. Helping to develop leaders is directly tied to our commitment to the elimination of disparities in health and the achievement of health equity. In many ways, my family and I were victims of poverty and racism. But as a college student during the civil rights and student sit-in movement, I had the opportunity to confront racism nonviolently. That experience is certainly a part of who I am. In addition, my history is one of confrontation, of experiencing disparities in health, and of embracing the goal of health equity. Having been born Black and poor in the Deep South, I was a victim of an unjust health care system. However, I was not unlike hundreds of thousands of other American citizens. The social conditions that were dominant during that time were those that characterized much of American history of race relations and social inequity. Discrimination in education, employment, and income, coupled with violence and threats of violence, led to persistent poverty, social exclusion, ignorance, and little or no access to health care. This described the woeful plight of African Americans in much of America, but especially those living under the laws of Jim Crow in the South, especially in Alabama, my home state. These conditions could only be addressed by a momentous and courageous social commitment of conscience, spirit, blood, sweat, and tears. The civil rights movement has been called the most significant human rights movement in history. And I was there, particularly participating in the late 1950s and early 1960s as a student leader at Morehouse College in Atlanta. In the process of helping to lead change, I was changed in a way that would propel me into the future. As a student at Morehouse, I moved from being a victim of racism to having an opportunity to confront racism and segregation. Early in my tenure as a student, a meeting was called by Atlanta University student leaders to announce a planned sit-in movement at restaurants, similar to ones in North Carolina and Mississippi. It would be a nonviolent protest. We would resist the temptation to fight back and would go to jail if necessary. It was clear that we would probably be arrested, but no assurance of how or when we would be released, even though there were lawyers volunteering to work with us. By that time, I had heard Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. speak about nonviolent resistance, so I understood the concept. Given what I had experienced and what my parents had gone through in Alabama, I needed this opportunity to fight back, to confront racism. Despite my anxiety about the impact this could have on my attending medical school, I decided to join the student sit-in movement in 1960. Confronting racism was high on my list of priorities. One of my favorite Martin Luther King Jr. quotes is, "Until a person finds something for which he is willing to die, then he is not fit to live." I was not quite ready to die, but I was ready to risk my cherished career in order to help change the segregation laws and ways of the South. Student leaders were impressive also. I especially remember three of these upperclassmen. Lonnie King was a junior from Atlanta, and he was especially committed to changing Atlanta, where only black restaurants would serve blacks, and where the largest downtown department store would hire blacks only for menial jobs. Then there was Marion Wright, now Marion Wright Edelman, a junior at Spelman, our sister institution. Dynamic and courageous, she spoke with authority. Marion would go on to law school at Yale and become the first black member of the Mississippi Bar. She went on to found the Children's Defense Fund, spending a lifetime fighting for the rights of children in Washington, D.C. But first, we had to fight the Battle of Atlanta. Another impressive student leader was Otis Moss, Jr., who had graduated from Morehouse College but was a student in the Morehouse School of Religion. Otis was dynamic and would go on to pastor two great churches, including Olivet Institution of Baptist Church in Cleveland, where I would attend medical school. He would also chair the Board of Trustees at Morehouse College. He was twice selected as one of America's 15 greatest black preachers by Ebony Magazine. What these three student leaders had in common was a caring and commitment to the cause of justice. I was motivated to follow them and was soon arrested when we sought service at a restaurant in downtown Atlanta and later at other segregated establishments. We were well prepared physically and mentally for what we had to face. We knew how to fall and to protect our face and heads. We pushed each other downstairs in order to prepare to fall properly. And when we were out on the picket line, we anticipated and dealt with the attacks that would come to us without striking back. For us, nonviolence was a real commitment. On Sundays, a group of fellow students and I would walk 4 to 5 miles to downtown Atlanta to Ebenezer Baptist Church, where Dr. King was co-pastor with his father. Whenever we knew Dr. King was in town and preaching, we would set out after attending the required chapel services at Morehouse College to make it in time to hear Dr. King preach. Dr. King had the most unusual ability to educate, motivate, and mobilize people to action, and he certainly motivated me and others to join the student movement. In many ways, both Dr. King and I were motivated by a common leader, Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, the president of Morehouse College from 1940 to 1967, who was committed to academic excellence for every student who entered the school. He spoke in chapel every Tuesday morning, and we sat on the edge of our seats as he challenged us to, quote, "aim for the stars and not the ceilings of your lives." He did not encourage us to go to jail, but his message was clear. We shouldn't accept less than the best from ourselves or society. Later, speaking at my inauguration as the new president of Meharry Medical College in 1982, Dr. Mays was in a wheelchair, but he repeated that challenge to me and to Meharry, and we listened to him. Martin Luther King Jr. heard that message when he was a Morehouse student in the late 1940s, and I heard it as a student in the early 1960s. But my favorite Benjamin Elijah Mays quote, one which I've carried with me throughout my life and work, is as follows. "It must be borne in mind that the tragedy of life doesn't lie in not reaching your goal. The tragedy lies in having no goal to reach. It's not a calamity to die with dreams unfulfilled, but it is a calamity not to dream. It's not a disaster to be unable to capture your ideal, but it is a disaster to have no ideal to capture. It's not a disgrace not to reach the stars, but it is a disgrace to have no stars to reach for. Not failure, but low aim is sin. Dr. Mays motivated me to work to achieve excellence and not be happy with less than my best. So despite my involvement in the student movement, I took my studies seriously, even taking my books to jail with me. I excelled in the classroom, graduating magna cum laude. On one occasion, I emerged from jail just in time to take a biochemistry exam the next day. It was somewhat unnerving, but when we got our grades, I learned that I had made the second highest score on the exam. Now, while that felt good to me, my classmate who had made the highest score didn't think very much of someone who would go to jail and come back and not do his best on the exam. There's more than one perspective to every story, and in this case, I got the benefit of both perspectives. My own leadership would also begin at Morehouse College, where I was elected and served as Student Government Association president during my senior year. I would also rise to leadership of the student movement when we spent a week in jail on a hunger strike. The strike, which was widely publicized, led business leaders in the community to come together and to say that if Atlanta was going to become a global city, it couldn't afford this kind of publicity. We agreed. Thus, the process of desegregation began and grew. I've been a victim of racism and segregation, and as a student, I've had the opportunity to confront racism. And as a student, I also became a leader and would leave for medical school at Case Western Reserve University in Ohio, knowing that I had the opportunity to see myself not just as a victim, but as one who confronted racism and as a leader in medicine. It should be noted that when I left college to go to medical school, most hospitals in the South would not allow black physicians to admit patients. In fact, it was in 1964 in Greensboro, North Carolina, that the case was brought that forced hospitals who wanted to receive Medicaid and Medicare funding to end discrimination. In time, it virtually ended that kind of discrimination throughout the country. The student sit-in movement motivated me to be not just a doctor, but a leader in medicine as well. When I left college and headed to medical school, I had both a passion for and a commitment to leadership. Over the course of my life, I've had many opportunities to lead. I've been a leader in academia, as president of two medical colleges, within churches, as director of a major governmental public health agency, and as Surgeon General and Assistant Secretary for Health of the United States of America. But in spite of this, I do not consider myself an expert in leadership. Instead, I regard myself as a serious student of leadership, which I see as a continuous learning process. I agree with President John F. Kennedy's November 22, 1963, undelivered statement for the Dallas trademark. Leadership and learning are indispensable to each other, he said. Over the years, I would have many opportunities to lead, and 14 years ago, the Morehouse School of Medicine Board of Trustees voted to establish the Satcher Health Leadership Institute. I felt that I had a lot to share with students of leadership as I continued to learn myself, but it was the mission of striving for and achieving health equity that motivated me from my near-death experience in Alabama until this day, as I seek to help others to become the best leaders that they can be. My major focus today, through SHLI-MSM, is on developing future leaders who will work to close the gap in life expectancy.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?